Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this evening. Many of you heard our coverage of Camp 83, the homeless tent city that the city government destroyed. As a result of that coverage, I was approached by Ann West, a community volunteer who supports and works with Baltimore Outreach Services, that's part of the Christ Lutheran Church in South Baltimore. It's one of the very few shelters, one of only four shelters, for homeless women and children in Baltimore. She encouraged us to come down and visit, meet with the women, and see the program. And what my producer, Stephanie Mavronis, and I discovered was nothing like the chaos and dystopian air that pervades most of the homeless shelters in our communities. We entered the Christ Lutheran Church, where the homeless shelter is housed. The church was just beautiful, with lovely stained glass windows, very holy feeling. It felt like you were in some suburban wealthy parish, but we were in a holy place, dedicated to social justice. And the formerly homeless women were amazing.
Well, I lost my job due to budget cutbacks. You know how things go, one thing leads to another, and, you know, I wanted to do things around the house and do this and that, and when I finally decided to go back to work, the job market just wasn't there. And I tried finding a job for over 4 years and just wasn't able to find a job.
I lost my job. Well, they had to do cutbacks like Ms. Sharon, and I just couldn't do it no more. Stuff started falling apart for me. I lost my house, and then had to put everything in storage.
I had never lived on my own. I'd always lived with my mother or with family. I was actually living with my mother, and we had gotten evicted, and me and my kids were just from place to place with friends and family.
What happened was I didn't have a job, and I hadn't been working in a whole year. So I had a sister that is epileptic, and she can't stay home by herself. So I was trying to work around her not being home by herself and me being able to. And it was just a lot of things. And then everything just seemed like it just hit the fan at one time.
I'm a mother of three. My situation, I was working CMT, work with autistic children and adults. I work for a company. They weren't too understanding about child care needs and things.
We're going to hear more from them later in this broadcast. We can hear the stories of their lives, the stories they shared with us, the hopes for the future, who they are, who their souls are. But before we hear all those stories in full, we're going to learn a little bit more about this place, Baltimore Outreach Services, a shelter for women and children. It's located, as I said, inside the Christ Lutheran Church in South Baltimore, a church with a history of helping the community. We learn more about the history while walking around the church and the shelter with Karen Atkins, who's the founding executive director of Baltimore Outreach Services, and Ann West, the community volunteer who introduced us to this place.
Well, some church members went to meet, and during World War II, what happened is soldiers who came in on leave stayed in churches when they didn't have a place to stay. So when the church did the renovation, they decided, you know, maybe this will happen again. We need to keep this space with showers and a kitchen. So for a while, it was a soup kitchen. And all the churches in South Baltimore alternated. One day a week, they fed people in the soup kitchens. And then it became a homeless shelter.
The shelter originally belonged to the South Baltimore Station, a drug treatment program that now focuses only on men. This was their Women and Children's Center. And then
Christ Church was in the middle of a strategic planning process, voted that we should commit to this because there are only four homeless shelters for women and children in Baltimore City.
And that is the fastest growing population of homeless, that there's only four places for families to go and stay whole.
Yes. Nationwide, it's the fastest growing for women and children. When I just reviewed the revised report from the homelessness report 5 years in, you know, one of the things that you read is that the population of women and children has stayed consistent. There are about 983 people in that population. There was a slight upturn, and then it went back to, it was 983, it was then back to 932. So the population we're serving has really stayed pretty consistent during a difficult economic time. Now, we have seen more people who had never been in a homeless shelter before during this time.
We walked into this large room that housed the women and their children. There are many beds close to one another, and cribs. There's a woman folding her clothes and her children's clothes, taking things out of a dryer. Two women who look secure and safe watching television. And while it was a place for 40 people they had to share, it was also warm. It didn't feel tight and frightening. It felt safe. Family's personal items and toys in their tiny living spaces were all over. And it was light, and you can feel the happiness in this place, the the happiness brought to the formerly homeless women and their children, and the joy and the peace that these women and their children brought to that place that was their temporary home. Warm, it was a dorm, but felt more like a home.
We have 40 beds for women and children, and,
ribs.
And some, and it varies. You know, sometimes we will take somebody from Hopkins's high risk program so that if a mom and child have no place to go right after they've delivered, then we often have a new baby here. We will take up to 3 kids under 2 because everybody's in an open dorm facility and you got to be able to sleep at night. So we've learned that that's kind of our maximum, and about 19, 20 children. And after we get the families in here with about 20 kids, then what happens is we'll fill in with some single women to fill out the 40 beds. But we keep a 97% utilization rate. As soon as a family with 3 kids leaves within a day or two, we've got another family that size to put in the space. So it stays really, there's great need. There are tracking calls, and usually we have about 20 calls every day for people seeking shelter. So I'll just kind of walk you through. Our kids are with our children's coordinator. She has taken them to make tie-dye shirts. It's spring break week.
That's right.
So they're making tie-dye shirts and having a disco ball at this facility. But this week they've gone to the Smithsonian. They've gone to Fort McHenry. They learned how to fly kites for the first time. This is our children's playground, and Pam's getting ready to do a gardening project with the kids, too, but it's a safe place. They can go out and run around in the middle of the courtyard. They'll plant flowers in the spring in all these containers.
Because it's enclosed, you know, they feel safe, and they are safe.
Right. The community has been incredibly supportive. Initially there was a little bit of wondering how it would work out, and the pastor here kind of made a stand that we're going to help poor people at this church. And so we got the zoning change, and now the Federal Health Association, everybody, you know, donates to us, and we have a really good relationship with the community. Hi, guys. We're just going to walk through a second here. The kids come back here and play. Once the kids are asleep at night, the moms come back here and relax. We have groups every Wednesday here.
And we got the Pratt to come down, Deb Taylor, to do a family thing once a year.
A family reading program, yeah.
Right.
So we're excited to have that too. So we never know how many babies we're going to have or what age kids, so we just have to have some storage area for changing tables and cribs and... We have a full-time caseworker. She works with the women like every Tuesday at 2:00, and they work on housing and resources to, you know, medical resources, whatever they need to meet the goals that they have here. We have an initial stay of 90 days, but unlike a lot of other homeless shelters, we don't put people out at 90 days because for most of our folks, it really takes 5 months to get your ID, get some kind of income, and move to housing because there's just not enough transitional housing or supportive housing, permanent housing programs for women and children. This is Carla Richardson.
We met Carla Richardson, shelter director and former lead shelter manager.
Hi.
Karen and Carla explained the expectations the shelter has of the women and their children who stayed there.
Most of our folks are doing something, like our culinary arts program. People just graduated last night, and they're out doing something during the day. We want everybody involved in some kind of meaningful work activity. We have a full-time job development person who helps people write resumes and work on moving to jobs. We have a children's caseworker, a children's therapist, an adult mental health therapist that comes on site. We drug test upon it within 2 weeks of people being here, because if you don't deal with the substance abuse issues, then you can't really have people be successful in housing is what we believe. So if people test positive, we get them into treatment. Initially, they have to attend 3 AA or NA meetings a week, and then if they can't stay clean during that, doing that, then we move to 90 days of intensive outpatient services.
Okay, that's not like a Baltimore station for women.
Yes. No, sure. But there are other programs with Baltimore Behavior Health. University of Maryland has programs. Carla can pretty much get somebody into substance abuse treatment if they're willing to go. And there's some places now that you can go. Gaudenzia.
You can take your child
with you.
Yeah.
Where's that?
Park Heights.
There's also Day Spring. A lot of our folks with substance abuse issues go there and take our kids. Yeah.
And that's a little bit more permanent housing versus drug treatment, but you have to have a substance abuse issue in order to go there.
So if people want to get treatment, we really can. We have been able to find them a place with treatment. So that's not been as big a barrier as it was 10 years ago.
So you manage this place?
Yes.
So the women and the children all sleep in here together?
They do.
How's that work?
It works pretty good. We have to have a set time that everybody has to be in bed, of course, except for the adults. Once they get the kids sleep, they can, go in the recreation room and have their little me time, their me time.
Mothers need their me time.
They do. dinner is served at 6, so from 6 to 7, we're eating dinner. And then from 7 to, 8, we're doing chores. And we're getting prepared. We're showering, getting the kids ready for school for the next day. From about 7 to maybe 8:30, it's a little noisy. We have about 20, I think I counted 21 kids yesterday, different ages. So
how old is the oldest kid?
So I guess our oldest child, it will be 13. And she goes to one of the local middle schools here in the neighborhood, which is a pretty good school.
So the kids go to school, they go to school all locally here?
They have a law that they can stay at the existing school that they're at, and transportation is provided for them to
you all
school
do that?
From. Yes. So we set all of that up. We meet with the parents. We make sure the kids are in school within the first day of them coming. So usually by the next day, they have to go to school. So all kids have to go to school or be enrolled in some form of daycare, preschool, something.
And a community really forms. You would think that it's pretty intimidating to walk into a 40-bed shelter and, everybody live here together, but everybody does a chore, people work together, they're in the same situation. So community really forms, and older people will help younger women with kids. So it works. It's kind of incredible, but it works.
And I'm sure you have your issues.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
We do.
We have issues, but, Carla's great at working them out with people, and we always give people a second chance. But if people don't want to participate in the program and don't want to work on their goals, then after the 90 days, they can't stay here any longer. But anybody else who's doing what they're supposed to be doing can stay here until they get housing.
What does that mean, working on their goals?
That means,
who sets them?
If they have substance abuse issues, they need to be doing that. They need to do a certain amount of housing applications. They need to meet with the case manager on a regular basis. They need to meet with the jobs coach on a regular basis. They need to not have a lot of infractions, meaning like late curfews. So curfew is 7, so they can't continue to come in here at 8:30.
On a school night.
On a school night.
On the weekends, it's later.
We ask that they obtain, if they have past BG&E bills. Case manager can kind of set up a plan for them. So if they have past BG&E bills, she can start having them work on that. If they have past credit issues, she can have them start working on that. Because sometimes that's a barrier with housing, specifically low-income housing. If you have bad credit, you can't get into HUD housing. And it's 90 days, And if they don't have their birth certificates, Social Security cards, ID, a lot of people don't. So they have 90 days to work on those things. And some people just, here for the 90 days, don't want to do it, which is very few people that do that. But if that's the issue, then they can't stay past the 90 days.
Kathy Wood Rupert, Director of Job Development, joined us and explained the shelter's role in helping women become job ready.
I work with the women that we believe to be employable, hope to be employable, or that perhaps we can work on some other things that will eventually get them employable. Some of our women come with limited education, for example. They may have an 8th or a 9th or a 10th grade education. So one of the things that I try to do is convince them that it's really time to focus on moving forward and finishing and getting your GED. It's time to make that commitment to yourself. And then I hopefully put them in touch with a number of programs around the Baltimore area that can help them get involved. We have a lady right now that's getting ready tomorrow. She has an appointment to take a placement test to start the GED classes. I have another lady right now that it's actually in the classes, and I have another gal who's just finishing up, and we hope she's going to take her test in the next few weeks. So I work really hard on trying to help them know it's time to make that commitment to yourself. Some of the other things I'm involved in, the Culinary Arts Training Program, which I think you've heard about. We've just graduated a group of ladies last night We will be working hard on trying to help them find jobs. I've done a little bit of canvassing of the area and convinced a couple of chefs at local kitchens to at least interview and talk to a couple of our ladies. Fleming's Steakhouse is one of the chefs that will be meeting one of our ladies, I hope, next week. And he has actually employed one of our ladies from a previous class that we graduated last class that we did. So I work on trying to make contacts in the community and around the Baltimore area in the hopes that I can sort of open the door for some of our ladies. We spend a lot of time putting together resumes. They come up. We have a computer lab upstairs. I work with them to get online and apply for jobs. Sometimes they don't have a great deal of computer skills, so I will sit there and we'll work together and we'll do that application online together. A lot of times they certainly can do that themselves and they apply for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 jobs at the same time. Sometimes they get contacted and then we spend some time doing like mock interviewing. How would you answer this question? You know, I will sit and actually interview them. Try to help them decide how to explain circumstances in a way that's possibly more positive than they might have otherwise explained why they left a job, because some of those things can be real important during the interview. Some of our ladies have criminal backgrounds, things in their records. We kind of work on talking about those things and being honest and don't try to cover it up, because all you got to do is put a name and a birth date in these days and you can find out all sorts of things. So don't let an employer find out what you haven't told them. We work with our caseworkers. Sometimes we can get things expunged. We help them through some of those processes. Last year, we placed 17 women in jobs around the Baltimore area, which I think was fairly positive. And I'm hoping for more this year. We'll see.
I'll be curious what the kind of expectations of women are for themselves, what they want.
There are a number of programs around Baltimore City where I encourage, they offer training for CNA, pharmacy tech, those kinds of medically focused career paths. There's a few programs around Baltimore that happen at different times of the year. When I have a woman who has interest in those kinds of things, we check to see when they can apply to take the class, get them to apply, then they go to an orientation, they hopefully take the class, they get certified as a certified nursing assistant or a geriatric nursing assistant or pharmacy tech. And those things certainly do start the process of a much more of a living wage than a McDonald's or a Burger King or some of those places.
And one of our women that just finished the culinary arts program, I guess it's 2 years ago, she's been working lots of different part-time jobs and works for us part-time on the weekends. She just got a full-time job making $15 an hour for Maryland General. So that's certainly a living wage job that will make a difference in her ability to support her family.
Plus benefits.
That's huge.
For us, a lot of times we're trying to get them started into work as a regular pattern, and we're into more $10 an hour jobs. But they have the potential in kitchens to keep going as long as they have job skills and work hard. And
$10 an hour is like only $15,000 a year.
But
tough to find housing at $15,000 a year.
Well, the key is affordable housing for those. But if you're right. Used to making $400 a month, to go to $15,000 a year, it's the beginning. But absolutely,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's like one of the things that in the city that we've discovered, I mean, there is the affordable housing for poor people is almost non-existent.
That's
that's
the biggest barrier.
It's not there.
It is non-existent.
Yeah, so if you can get into housing where you pay 30% of your income, whether it's the $400 on public assistance or whether it is if you're making $15 an hour and it just changes as your income increases, then that's the key.
That is the key.
That's the key.
And that's a political question. I mean, you can't answer that question. I mean, that's the key.
People can't have housing that are working class folks that are working full time. They can't afford $850, $900 a month in housing plus utilities.
And then to actually feed themselves and their children. Affordable housing is the first key to helping people truly move out of the situations that they're in when they're here.
We began our walk through the church to the kitchen, where recent graduates of the Baltimore Outreach Services Culinary Arts Program were preparing lunch. We passed through the chapel and made a quick stop in the computer lab, which has become an important resource for women staying at the shelter and for their children after school.
This is our computer lab. So kids come here after school and work on homework, do research projects, and Kathy works here with all the women to do resume writing and searching for jobs. Every day after school, the kids come upstairs, and we employ 2 teachers from Federal Hill Elementary School, actually, who help them do their homework and then help with skill building.
Uh-huh.
The church is just incredibly generous with their space. The ministry started with the church and then evolved into a separate 501c3. So all of these Christian ed rooms during the week, these get changed into homework help programs.
We made it across the church to the kitchen and met the women who were putting the final touches on the lunch for our entire group. The culinary students, with the help of their mentor, Chef Connie Crabtree, who we will hear from a little later, put together an incredible cookbook of recipes called BOS Cooks, Boss Cooks. Then joining us at the table was Donna Rich, Deputy Director of the Baltimore Outreach Services. We learned about how the shelter was doing more than temporary housing of women and children, how it was preparing people for their lives, how it opened housing, real housing, for women and their children.
Donna is our development our director, and she's our deputy director. She also does all of our development, so she coordinates all kinds of stuff for us.
So when you said development, you mean development raising money?
Resource development, that's right. Yeah, money and whatever resources we need, mainly money, but sometimes in-kind donations and product services.
I know the stats about women and children who are homeless. My sense of it is that it's bigger than that, the stats that are out there.
There's 40% substance abuse. We certainly have mental illness. We have lots of other things. But we have some multi-generation poverty with people just not socialized to have the skills that they need to participate in society. So that's part of the problem, too. And we found that, we can be successful. Over 100 women have moved to work from our culinary arts job training. We know that these are small numbers because we're a small organization, but we've had 20 people who've completed two-year programs in our supportive housing, and that's all women who work, and they've all moved to independent housing. We started with one or two transitional houses, and then now we have 9 houses that we work at for 2 years. 7 of them, yes. We own 7 of them. We bought 7 houses. Scattered site housing. We own 3 in Brooklyn, Curtis Bay, within a 2-block range. We own
church owns scattered site housing.
Boss. Baltimore Outreach Services owns the scattered site housing. So.
And there was service permanent housing for women who leave?
It is supportive housing for 2 years. And then our goal is we take women who work full-time, and they pay $500 a month rent. They clear up their past due credit issues. At the end of the 2 years, they've been able to move to regular market rate housing.
You want to tell us then what's for it lunch? Was time to eat.
We have a field green salad with balsamic vinaigrette dressing that we make in the kitchen. Pulled chicken with our special barbecue sauce. Tell them what's in the chicken salad.
The chicken salad has cranberries in it, celery, pulled chicken, and a secret honey mustard in there as well.
Mm-hmm. And rolls, if anybody like bread, iced tea and water with lemon, and brownies and bread pudding. I didn't make the bread pudding.
The bread pudding has cranberries and butterscotch in it.
With a chocolate
drizzle on the side.
Over a delicious meal, we talked about their lives and this culinary arts program, which for many of the women not only taught them professional skills, but also empowered them in the midst of their difficult situation.
You must have. Did you all cook before you got here?
From a family.
Right.
We've had people enter the class from that were doing something totally different, that didn't even know if they wanted to cook or was interested in it. And then when they started taking the class, were some of the best students and really did develop a talent for it and enjoyed it and went on to actually get jobs in the field. And then we have a lot of women that start because they love to cook, and they join the course, and then, they even develop their skills even further.
See, I really didn't have a desire to go into really cooking because I was an administrative assistant for 25 years before I lost my job years ago due to budget cutbacks. And when I was at the shelter, I just did anything that was offered to me to better, and I thought what would be the worst thing that would come out of it would I would be a better cook for my family. So, and then I also thought that, there's also administrative assistants in hotels and hospitals and things like that that would work for the food department, for the kitchen and everything, and that would maybe give me a heads up as far as that, so I just did anything that, would better, to help me better my situation.
Do you all have children?
I have one.
Three young children.
Well, mine's is a soon to be freshman in high school.
You say any 14?
Yeah. He, she?
He.
And where's he going?
He's going to Lansdowne High.
Oh, in the county?
Yes. I live in the county now. I have permanent housing now.
Oh, she don't live here?
No, I don't live anymore.
Who lives here now?
I moved out a week ago.
You moved out a week ago?
I'm now in transitional.
I done been through all the motions. I done been here to transitional, and now I'm in my permanent housing. So.
The shift?
Yeah. It was a lot, but it was well worth it. Because I'm happy where I'm at now.
We have to take a very brief break, but don't go away. We're going to come right back to Baltimore Outreach Services. And when we come back, we're going to come back with these powerful stories from some of the women who stayed at that shelter. So don't go away. Stay with us. Mark Steiner's show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. What if you're struggling with your mortgage? The state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. Welcome back. Let's jump right back into our conversation with the women who spend time at Baltimore Outreach Services Shelter for Women and Children. When times in their own lives got tough, what they found there, who they are, where they came from, what they hope for.
How did you end up homeless? How did you end up leaving this place? Do you mind me asking?
I had never lived on my own. I'd always lived with my mother, with family. I was actually living with my mother, and we had gotten evicted. And me and my kids were just from place to place with friends and family. I'd only called here for 2 days, so I was very fortunate. And I got beds for myself and my children.
So you're living with your mom? You weren't working?
No, not at the time. Because of, like, difficulties with childcare. So everything just kind of, once I came here, just started to fall into place. There, I had a lot of help, a lot of resources. It's honestly the best thing that could have happened to me. It forced me to grow up and take a look at my life and what I was doing and where I was at and what I needed to do to get where I need to be for not only myself, but for my children as well.
Must be scary at the moment, though, having to move from place to place.
Yeah, never being sure of how long you're going to be there or where you're going to go or what you're going to do next. And then coming here, it just kind of, I've noticed a big difference in my children. It gave them a little bit of stability and security, and they weren't so scared of where we were going or what was going to happen.
How old are your kids?
They're 2, 3, and 6.
Oh. And what about your mom? What happened to her?
She's actually here now.
She's
also,
here now?
Also, she's been here almost a month. That relieved a little extra stress. I know that she's okay, and she's got somewhere that she can be every night, and she's got meals.
Because she was also moving from place to place?
Yes. And there were times where she had nowhere to go. She was sleeping on the street, so.
That's scary.
It made a big difference. I'm very grateful to Boss and their staff. The staff, they go out of their way to make sure you're doing what you need to do, not as far as like trying to be a parent or trying to say that they're better than you, just to kind of guide you along where you need to be and where you need to go. And it's a wonderful blessing and a wonderful experience. It wasn't anything like I expected to find from a shelter.
And where were you living?
I was in East Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And I had actually went to social services, and they gave me a list of places. And this was actually the first place that I called, and I was just told, we'll try calling back tomorrow. So I called back the next day, and I was told, we're going to move a couple people around, see what we can do, call us back later this afternoon. And I called back, and they told me to come in for an intake.
Sharon, you said you were an administrative assistant for a long time?
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
Well, I lost my job due to budget cutbacks. And, you know, I became within a couple weeks within a firm believer of everything happens for a reason. And within a week, my mother was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer.
Mm.
So when I lost my job, it was kind of a blessing because I was able to take care of her And I took care of her until she passed away. And then after she passed away, you know, I didn't go back to work right away. I just was a single mom raising my two kids by myself. And I thought, well, I would just take the summer off, enjoy, you know, some time with my kids since, you know, I had just gone through a grueling year with my mom and everything. And, you know, how things go, one thing leads to another. And, you know, I wanted to do things around the house and do this and that. And when I finally decided to go back to work, the job market just wasn't there. And I tried finding a job for over 4 years and just wasn't able to find a job.
How old are your kids?
27 and 19. So my son's out on his own. And then my daughter, well, she's in college right now.
So how did you, you ended up, after you couldn't find a job for those 4 years, I mean, you ended up where? Where were you living?
I was living in my own house, and I lost my house to foreclosure.
And then where'd you go?
I was staying with a friend for a while.
Well, that's it, yeah. I mean, there's so many people, the story, you were in a solid place, and then things just tumbled out of control. Mm-hmm. How long were you here?
5 months.
And now where are you?
I'm living in one of their transitional houses.
And I think that, for me, because people have this idea of who's homeless, as opposed to understand that homeless people are just, they're no different than anybody else. They just, this, the edge came and you were there. You know, and we just forget that all the time.
My stuff just fell apart. I lost my job. Well, they had to do cutbacks like Ms. Sharon, and I got laid off. First layoff or whatever. I mean, however they do it.
Fired.
And that's what they did. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't do it no more. Stuff started falling apart for me. I lost my apartment, well, my house. And then had to put everything in storage. I called down boss and talked to them. And by my son being as old as he was, I guess because, you know, little boys these days, they're tall. So they had to see how tall he was. And then he looked like a little child. And I was like, and I came in, he came in, we came in. And I was here for 6 months. Then I got a letter from transitional. And I went to transitional. And now I'm in my permanent housing. And I'm working for Chef Crabtree. So everything's falling in place for me, I guess. Yes.
So you lost your house. Was it you were renting her or you were buying?
The money situation. Money started evaporating very fast. I had to pay bills. And then I was like, I can't do this by myself no more. I just couldn't do it. I was like, I keep stressing myself. Like, first I was playing, like, we going in the shelter. My son was like, no, we ain't. I was like, yes, we is. I was serious.
It must have been scary, though.
I was just saying it, but I didn't think I was really going to do it. Because I didn't want, because I've been through the whole going to stay with people and people be like, well, you can't stay here no more. I didn't feel like going through that no more. So I was just like, let me put my big girl drawers on and go to the shelter. So I just called just to see if they was going to have a space, and they did. She was like, when can you come? And I was like, well, I can come. And she was like, okay. When I had a spot.
Then Chef Connie Crabtree arrived. She's the director of the Baltimore Outreach Services Culinary Arts Program.
Connie's our culinary course expert. She started the course.
Well, I did. In the fall of 2005, we started this job training, and I guess the thing that was most significant is that I had over 30 years of cooking professionally, owning restaurants and catering, and I had some very definite ideas about what people needed to know to go to work. And I know from having cooked professionally for so many years that it's still a profession where if you have the stamina and the willingness and you're dependable, you can make it a career. So we set about to put some basics together. We teach food safety. We test them at a managerial level on food safety. We work on some basic knife skills and basic terminology, things that are trendy, things that would be used in a kitchen, the way that other people are working. If we can learn in 8 weeks enough of those skills to feel confident and fit in when you go for a job and not feel like you have three heads when chef says to you, grab a bain-marie and start the mise en place for the cream of crab soup, and you're sitting there going, okay, I only got two words in that, cream of crap, three words. Then you know enough to fit in and ask the right question. Last night, my 20th class graduated. We now have well over 100 graduates, and last night's class was the largest class we've ever had finish. 9 students, and you have 3 graduates at this table, a couple more in there, a graduate from my last class who came in today to join us, who, ironically, we've got only out of all of these classes, out of 20 classes, I have 3 students who have perfect attendance.
Chef Crabtree pointed at 3 of the women sitting around the table
so
with us.
That's why we asked them to be here today, because even if I couldn't show up, which has never happened before, I knew they would show up. So I think what I try to do, I don't know, you guys can speak to it better than I can, is keep it real. I mean, I try to not coddle people. We usually find events that we can do. A couple of weeks ago, we participated in Women's History Month at University of Maryland and had lunch for 200 women. So we keep it as close to a real scenario as you can. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Definitely.
Is it real?
Yeah. One of the things I compliment a chef about is she not only teaches us culinary skills, but she teaches us life skills to prepare us. I mean, so many different times in class, she let us know, hey, when you're working, this is what's going to be expected of you. At the same time, remaining very down-to-earth and approachable.
Yeah. When we're working, if I'm not sitting, they can't sit.
That's right. Chef has definitely been our rock, so to speak, coming from, you know what I mean, coming from where we are coming from. She's very uplifting, and she keep us, you know, on our toes. She definitely do.
No excuses.
Yep. Yep.
Do you mind if we ask them? I'm really interested in people's stories about how they ended up here.
Here?
Yeah.
I lost my apartment, ended up at the shelter. Me and my I got 2 children.
How old are they?
One ready to be 18.
Ooh.
And one is getting ready to be 14.
Okay.
So I got kind of big kids. When I came, I was just like a mess. I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I don't want to go to the shelter. My name, when I got down here, my name wasn't on the list. I had to put my name on the list because our counselor told me to come down here. So I came, you know, bright and early, like I always do. And I came and she was like, Miss Kathy was like, your name ain't on the list. Well, just sign your name on the list. And I came and I said, okay, I could do this. I can do this because it's something that I want to do. I love to cook. I express it all the time. I can't express how I just love it. I just love it. So I came, I showed up, and here I am 8 weeks later. I've actually finished something that I started. Didn't have a lot of that, you know, in my life, you know, starting stuff and not finishing, you know. So I actually finished. I'm really proud of that. On my way to a job and on my way to a house, and it's going to be okay.
So you're living here now with your kids?
No, we live at another shelter.
Yeah,
it's another shelter that they deal with. It's a 24-hour shelter, just like downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Women and children. It could be frustrating at times, but I have to say, it's light at the end of the tunnel. It's light at the end of the tunnel. It's light at the end of the tunnel, so.
So how did you lose your apartment?
What happened was I didn't have a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't been working in a whole year. So I had a sister that is epileptic, and she can't stay home by herself. So I was trying to work around her not being home by herself and me being able to. And it was just a lot of things. And then everything just seemed like it just hit the fan at one time. And I think it really was. I think it was like God telling me, you know, I'm a firm believer that God speaks to people. And it was time for me to get up off my butt, dust myself off, and do what I needed to do. You know, and that was my breaking point when I lost my apartment. That was in January. That was my breaking point.
In the winter.
Yeah, I was lucky to find a shelter that would take, you know, me and my children, well, me and my child at that time.
And now your sister is here.
Yeah, my sister's
down. About to ask you about your sister.
Yeah, she's downstairs. I'm glad of that too. That took a lot of
weight off of you.
Oh my goodness, y'all. Yeah. I can't tell you how I'm the little big sister. She's older than I am, actually.
But you're the little big sister.
Yeah, I'm the little big sister. And I was running and running and running. And it seemed like everything is coming full circle now. I don't have to worry about her. She's good here. So I can go ahead and do the things that I need to do. You know what I mean? To pick us up and keep it moving.
Hi. My name's Andrea. I'm a mother of three. My situation, I was working CMT, work with autistic children and adults. I work for a company. They weren't too understanding about child care needs and things. I relocated to Harford County to give a better environment for my boys. Everything was going really well. I didn't account for traffic, 95 tunnel or 895 tunnel, which were my two options to get to work. I started coming later and later. I mean, it really depended on how backed up it was and for how long it was backed up.
Getting the kids to get out the door.
Getting the kids out the door weren't the issue. Mm-hmm. Getting home in time for them was an issue. And like I said, just making it to work on time, depending on what traffic was. If anybody's ever taken 895 or 95, you never really know. Some days it may flow and some days it may not. My boss started to hint toward me that, you know, they're not going to keep excusing 15 minutes, 20 minutes, which was heartbreaking to me because I had been with the company for 3 years. And I kind of felt like, you know, you guys know what kind of work I do. How could you not, you know? But I guess sometimes that's just business. Eventually, I had to put my 2 weeks notice in. I figured that was better than getting fired. And after that, things seemed to have a domino effect. I lost a job, then I lost the car, and then the house came afterwards. I didn't really have a support system. Being independent for so long, you kind of build this pride. They say pride will kill you, but you kind of build this pride. I can do it myself. And so at the times when I should have asked for help, I was reluctant because I didn't want anyone to know, you know, how bad things really were. I started being from pillow to post, you know. I think like most of the women here, being in the shelter is really the last thing that you want to do. Surprisingly, though, I get there and I have the opportunity to go to this cooking class. And, I mean, even the staff that works at the shelter was like, oh my gosh, you ladies are a new person. Like you're happy now. I haven't seen you smile since you came in here. I mean, it really was like a breath of fresh air to have something to do, something positive, working towards something. And more than that, you know, the staff here, we knew we would be working with Chef Connie, but we didn't know that we were going to be dealing with other staff members who, like I said, everybody here was willing to help. They were understanding. They were approachable. They were everyday people just like us. Nobody treated you like, oh, you're that shelter person and, you know, you don't know nothing because you're in a shelter. I mean, they had more understanding than I thought they would. You know, everybody has hard times, and not everyone has a support system like they would like to have. So, you know, if you don't have someone there to pick you up, you fall, and you fall hard. But it's not gloomsday, you know. We're here. We're confident. I'm very confident that I could walk into any restaurant and be prepared to learn and to do whatever was set out for me to do. And I'm just so grateful that I had this experience. I remember the day I signed my name on the list, it started off with something to do instead of just sit around. And now, I mean, I encourage everybody, like the next classes, you better sign up. You want to take that. And me, I had no interest in cooking because I wasn't too good at it. I mean, I would burn rice. And now rice just happens to be one of my favorite dishes to make. And now I'm proud to have people come over and cook a dish and watch them enjoy it. I mean, there's no better feeling than someone eating your food and enjoying it, you know. I have a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 6-year-old. Right. And just a little joke, you know, when I told my kids I was in culinary class, they said, they're letting you cook?
Are you here?
No, we're also at another shelter on the west side of Baltimore that works hand in hand with this shelter.
How was it living here or living in this?
Well, I was here for 4 months. I feel very blessed and fortunate that it was only 4 months having three children, and it was just an exceptional experience that there were people there for you, like I previously said, because in my life I hadn't always found that people were so willing to help me out, and that I always had to figure out how to do it on my own. And it took me a little bit to actually get used to having people there to go to and having people there that would help me, especially with my children. I've always had somebody that would kind of take over with them and not help me learn how to do it with them. But being here taught me how to do it, not to run to somebody else to do it for me. So it was just an amazing experience.
For myself, humbling would have to be the word. It's not the Ritz Hotel at all. But what I learned is to be more appreciative of the things that I've had. I'm a very giving person, but I've also learned that some things were meant just for me, you know, and everybody's not going to treat your things the way you would like them to. And, you know, I learned how to say no, you know, and now that I've had this experience, it's so much easier to say, I'm not going back to where I came from. So, I mean, you take the bad right along with the good. And again, you know, it's not the lap of luxury, but it has everything there that you need, that's a necessity. You have everything that you need, and it shows you what's important, what really counts, what really matters.
At one point during our conversation, some of the women around the table asked me why we wanted to do this story about them. I explained it was important for people to hear their voices, real voices of real people who experienced homelessness. There was a common thread between all their stories. Each one was affected in some ways by the economic crisis, layoffs, evictions, the inability to find a new job. And I said to them, in some ways, we're all very vulnerable to that, in very similar ways.
I said before I left the table that for me, it's all of us, including myself, we're all like 4 to 10 paychecks away ourselves.
Right.
You know, I mean, just most of us don't. You know, I think about that stuff all the time.
I wish I would have cut my losses a lot sooner, and maybe would have had more in savings, and just, you know, I won't pay this right now,
right.
And I'll
pay this, right.
I'll pay what counts the most.
Right, yep, yep.
And, you know, it's ridiculous.
Robbing Peter to pay Paul and trying to, you like, okay, I ain't going to pay this, no, but I'm going to pay this right here, and then, okay.
Like that
you,
bill is an accumulator, right?
Right. Then the whole time, that was like with me, I felt myself like, because I only had one income, trying to figure out how I'm going to pay my rent. Okay, I can pay the rent, don't pay the light bill, then the light bill double up the next month. So I did. I said, okay, well, I put a little bit on the light bill, so I got to tell my landlord, oh, well, I can't give you all the rent. Mm-hmm. And she looking at me all sideways like, you know what I mean? Then I got, okay, then school has started. I said, oh, Lord, school started. Then I got to figure out how they're going to get school clothes. So then there I go again with pride, not wanting to tell somebody outside of, like, my house, that I need some help. I'm drowning here. And my sister was kind of upset with me because I am that type of person. I don't like to ask for help. I'm always the one that I'm going to get up and I'm going to do it. I'm going to find a way, I'm going to do it. And being as though that I'm changing because I'm not the same person I was yesterday. I've been locked up and all that stuff. And my background, I'm not doing that stuff no more. So these last 5, 6, 7, 8 years has been, I'm a totally different person than I was back then. So I'm trying to change. So I'm trying to do the things the right way. I'm not trying to do the things the wrong way. And having social service, and you got social service, and you're only getting, I get 576, trying to take that 576, and what, I can't do it. So I'm like, oh, God, I'm drowning.
Even with working, the cost of living compared to what you're getting paid, it doesn't match up. And I don't understand, like, in what world are you judging these numbers from?
Right.
You know, I want to, and it's not wanting to live in a lap of luxury either. Just basic. I want something clean,
right.
Lead free, mm-hmm. You know, and then safe. And the amount of money that they want, it's just not reasonable at all. I mean, you look at minimum wage and an adult, you know, I could see starting a 17-year-old, you just getting, but
right. out of high school.
And
right.
Now we're in a day and age where your hard work doesn't really count. It doesn't. You know, you don't get paid by the work you put in and how good of a job you do. You know, you get raises by someone liking you or, you know, being favored. And it really breaks my heart because when I worked with those kids, I loved those kids. They weren't mine. Definitely. You know, it's so rewarding. You won't get a thank you for them, but you know what you're doing is genuinely helping them. And, you know, you could see the relationship. And it just, you know, honestly, it just burnt me up. People that didn't really do anything, you know. they got the raises because they knew how to, you know, I just wish it was a different type of evaluation that took place that counted for, you know, what your pay wages were.
I just feel so really good right now. Like, y'all can't even express to y'all how, like, good I feel right now. Like if y'all would have seen me 8 years ago and then, like, to see me now, like, my sisters and my kids and everybody was just, like, telling me, like, how proud and how proud they am of me, like, right now that I'm doing the grown-up thing. You know what I mean? Like, I've come into this training and, like, even at the shelter, they say, look at them, they smiling and they happy. And then you get the getting up in the morning and having something to get up for. And I get up in the morning, we sleep in the same dorm, and I do her like this. She like, I'm up. I'm like, okay, I'm on my way out the door. You coming? You getting up? Yeah. So, like, it's just a wonderful feeling and to have people like Chef Connie and Miss Kathy to look at you and say, I'm proud of you. And I'm glad, you know what I mean, that you did it. And to have started something again, and I came for 8 weeks every day, and sometimes I would get here before anybody, and then I would get here, and then here come Chef right behind me. Like, I would get here like 8:30 or 8:15, like every morning for 8 weeks I was here. I set my mind to something. I want somebody to know that they can depend on me. I'm dependable. I will show up, and I will do a good job when I show up. I want people to see that. And if she didn't see it, or if Kathy didn't see it, you know, they couldn't help me do the things that I need to do to move on. And I'm so very grateful, and I'm so very happy, and I'm so very thankful. Y'all just don't know. I'm trying to tell y'all. Y'all just don't know. Like, it's just a wonderful feeling. It just really is.
Yeah, we don't sugarcoat it. You know, I said the most valuable thing you can have at the end of this 8 weeks is my phone number, which you get on day one, and know that you can tell somebody to call it, because I won't sugarcoat it. I'll say, you know, you are a great cook, or somebody, you know, does a great job. Oh, but they miss 7 days out of 8 weeks. And that's, you'd rather not even talk to me if you know. But we won't. They got to know that, you know, dependability in this industry is the most important thing you have.
That's the part I like, the tough love. The tough love. She told us what we needed to hear, not what we wanted to hear. I had a death in my family during this 8 weeks, and Chef was like, get it together, show up. And that was what was important, you know, because the death is going to happen. We're all guaranteed that. But life goes on, and you still got to pick yourself up and go to work so you can pay the bills.
We did let her go to the funeral.
I'm happy you all could join us for this journey. It was eye-opening in many ways. All the women we met became homeless because they lost their jobs, because they could not keep up with their rent or their mortgage payments. They outlived their welcomes in other people's homes, moving from place to place. They all had a history of work and making ends meet until they met up with the reality of being homeless on the streets of Baltimore with their children. All these women now have hope. We need more places like the Baltimore Outreach Services and more churches like Christ Lutheran Church that are involved to make this world a better place in finding a place for the homeless. And we need to end homelessness. There is no reason that anyone should be homeless in Baltimore. There's no reason for anyone to be homeless in America. Housing should be a right, and women and their children should not live in fear of no place to call home. Thanks for listening. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Stephanie Malvronis, and Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts at WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.